consecutive time in the last six seasons, the Dutch are the champions.
This is Gary O'Neill to win it.
They've got it! Terrific header, Callum Robinson, super ball in.
Great feeling, we have to treasure these nights.
Well, hello there, this is the RT Soccer Podcast. Hope you're keeping well, and of course, so important, keeping your distance. Myself and James O'Toole, miles apart. How are you doing, James?
I'm not doing too bad, Adrian. I do miss being in the studio and looking at you across the desk, it must be said.
Do you really?
Yeah, of course you do. We miss the coffee and the new routine of fruit and nuts during the podcast. I'm missing that now at this stage.
Yeah, you see, that routine of nuts and healthy stuff, that was never going to last, James. We missed the cakes and the biscuits and all that.
Hang on a second. It's still lasting here in the Shea O'Toole here at the moment, to tell you the truth. We're trying to get out every day to do our bit of exercise with all the kids and that. But it's been tough, it has to be said. We just did some schoolwork this morning on RTE with the home school at home stuff, which was quite good. The kids enjoyed that. So we're getting there. We're eventually getting there.
And what about your social media life? I saw you posting on Twitter a sliding challenge on Roddy Collins. Roddy Collins, I think it was Roddy, wasn't it? But he had skipped away from you, and Dave Barry was watching on.
Dave Barry was watching on, of course he was. He hadn't skipped away from me. I had told him before, and I'm just going to say this. I said I was going to kick him once during the game. And when it came, in fairness, cameraman John Barrison caught it on the camera. You see, the ball's pushed away, so it was a get the ball, get the man. Dave Barry's looking on, very impressed, if I had to say so myself.
What's your Twitter handle? Because I'm sure loads of people will want to see that famous photograph of you in action.
It's at James O'Toole 18, I think it is. I think that's it. Yeah, James O'Toole 18. That's my Twitter handle. It usually goes up with the podcast anyway, so you can log on to my Twitter handle and abuse me if you want.
Check it out.
Sure, what else can we do in these days?
All right. Okay, coming up, we'll check in with the Finn Harps manager, Ollie Horgan, and we'll look back on a famous day for Sligo Rovers, their league title success in 2012 in the company of Ian Barraclough and Alan Keane. But first, let's check in with Shelburne's Carl Shepherd, who's on the line. Carl, how are you doing?
I'm not too bad. A bit stir crazy here now, but not too bad.
So what have you been doing to avoid being completely stir crazy?
Well, so far, it wasn't too bad until we went into sort of the complete lockdown. So I also work in a coffee company. So we were working on trying to donate our coffee machines to the HSE to keep them sort of fueled during this crisis. But unfortunately, the drop-off date was today. So that's all been sort of put on hold until we come out of lockdown and we're able to sort of go back to a bit of normality. But in terms of football-wise, it's just been kind of trying to tick over yourself, and it's quite tough because you can go out and run as much as you want, but when there's no one there to kick the ball back to you, it's a little bit tough.
And have you been doing that, getting out for runs when you can?
Yeah, that's fine. I'm sort of well used to that now. I think I'm almost counting this as another pre-season now, so I think it's maybe my 11th pre-season that I've had to do. So sort of well used to it and have enough runs in the locker really to keep myself entertained. But it's quite tough when you're not as you don't have that motivation. Normally you have, right, I have maybe 2 weeks downtime to rest, and then I have maybe 4 weeks of tough pre-season, whereas now you've no real solid days in place, so it's just about trying to get that motivation to get up and get out. And it's almost now that you have one chance to get out of the house, it's, right, I may as well do it every day.
Now, of course, you say you're into your, what was it, 11th season? Is that right, or pre-season, effectively?
I think it might be my 10th, but now this is almost my 11th pre-season, because I'm having to do my second one this year.
Gotcha. But, Carla, amidst this global pandemic, you actually fall into the at-risk category. Would you mind telling us why that is?
Yeah, so I have psoriatic arthritis. So then with that, I have a bit of a problem with my immune system. It's overactive, and to counteract that, I obviously take injections to sort of bring that down. So, yeah, I just need to be very careful if I say, even with normal things like cuts and all, if I get a cut, it's gone from being a normal healing time to weeks to months to actually heal cuts for me. So just in terms of my immune system, it's probably a little bit down on what a normal person's is. So I just have to be that extra bit careful and a little bit more safe than maybe your average person. And with that, I've had to sort of lock myself away from the girlfriend and her little one as well, just so I'm at the family's home now. So it's only myself and my dad and my little brother that I sort of am in contact with for the next few weeks anyway.
And Carl, you might just explain for us a little bit more about psoriatic arthritis. It's an inflammation, or one of the side effects is an inflammation of the joints, is that right?
Yeah, it is. So for me, I get it in my back the worst. And normally, in terms of football, it's okay. Like, it does sort of zap you fatigue-wise as well a bit. But the main thing with, for what I found anyway, is to get a solid load through it so regularly that you keep the same routine. So obviously when this came about, I was a bit worried, and now the back does be a little bit worse than what it normally does. But so say if I'm working, I'm active when I'm doing that, and then I'm going to training and I'm active again, so the back is getting the consistent load, whereas now when you're sitting in the house for hours on end, it's not really reacting too well to it. So I'm trying to keep myself moving as much as I can, even if it's within the house. And it's when I'm out running, I'm trying to do as much stretching and exercising as I can to sort of keep the back from, I wouldn't say seizing up, but getting as painful as what it can do.
And are you on medication for it, or painkillers, or how does that work?
Yeah, so I take an injection. So I used to have an injection every week called Humira, but I've come off that onto Cosentyx, which I take two injections for 5 weeks, which I've just come off, I think, last week. So now I take it once a month. So hopefully, look, I was having a little bit of problem with the back in pre-season, so I went on to that five-week program. So now hopefully the change in medication will do me good stead during this sort of break here now that we have.
And Carl, speaking about the loads going through, does that mean that when you're out doing your runs, you're constantly looking for grass instead of concrete?
It does, yeah. So it's also, as it's funny you actually mentioned that, so at Shells we train on the Astro. So now I'm in Portmarnock, I'm trying to find an Astro that I can run on, and I'm trying to find to stay away from the grass, because if I change from grass to Astro, grass to Astro, I find that it will be an inconsistent load sort of going through the back, and then I get problems with it. So now, Shells, we have been on the Astro, so I may actually, in the next few weeks, as long as this goes on, I may slowly go back onto the grass, because when we get back into it, we're going to be in June, and then it's going to be all grass sort of from there till the end of the season.
And Carl, when did you discover you had it? When did those symptoms start to manifest themselves?
It came on, I think it was the end of the 2017 season. So we had actually just won the double, and I was doing a UEFA B license at the time, and I couldn't stand for the whole set. So we'd be standing watching teams, the other coaches coaching, and I couldn't stand, and I was thinking, there's something seriously wrong with my back here. I can't stand, so I had to get a chair and sit down, and my back was spasming and cramping the whole time I was at these, and I was onto my physio, and then he was saying, look, we'll monitor it. You maybe pulled a muscle or strained the muscle in your back. So I was thinking, okay, that's fine. And then I had a physio at the time called James Peckett, who I said to him, look, James, this is going on for maybe 2 months now, where we're coming into pre-season and it's giving me awful pain. And he was just like, he just said out of curiosity, do you have any rashes or anything like that going on with you? I just said, I've worn where my shin guards go from a few of the pre-season matches, but that's about it. And he said, well, look, I'm going to send you off for tests. I think you might have a form of arthritis here. He said, it might be psoriatic arthritis. You have all the symptoms and everything that goes with it. And typically me being, I think I was maybe 27 at the time, 26, 27. I laughed at him. I was saying, there's no way I'm a 27-year-old with arthritis, James. I play football all the time. I'm as fit and healthy as I can be. And then he just said, look, we'll send you off. Worse comes to worse. They say, no, when we can get to the end of what's wrong with your back. And then went off for the tests, and the blood tests came back saying that I did, and then it was obviously just a sort of life-changing moment from there.
And is it hereditary?
It's apparently hereditary, but no one else in my family has it, so unless I'm the postman's son, I don't know where it came from.
And in terms of the future, Carl, is it a case of just managing it, or dare I ask, will it progressively get worse, or may it ease off?
So I'm actually unsure. So when I was speaking to... I was speaking with a doctor called Sinead Harney on it. She was saying, look, we can take this medication now and hopefully then it may get better, and it's also trying to prevent it from getting worse. So I'm hoping that when I stay on this medication, I can maybe taper it down a little bit, or it may be that it may get slightly worse. But at the moment, I found that, so I obviously just deal with it with the symptoms as they come along. So say last year at Cork, I was struggling with it a fair amount, but I try not to bring it up, as I don't want to use it as an excuse ever on the pitch. If I have a bad game, then I don't want to go, oh, it's my back that's at me and this is why I'm not running right or I'm not playing as well. But then I just want people to go, all right, he played bad, that's just him playing poorly, not, oh, he, the poor soul, has a sore back. So I try not to bring it up to as much as I can. But so last year at Cork, I was struggling with it big time throughout the whole year. But now this year at Shells, I'm sort of, well, unfortunately for me, I was sort of getting into the swing of things, and my back was feeling good. And then obviously this breaks down, and then we just have to try and keep ticking over as best I can.
And Shelburne had made such a solid start to the season as well, tucked away nicely in fifth position. A couple of bumps along the road, but generally a very, very solid start.
Yeah, we did. We had a really good start down in Cork. We got a win, and then we had Dundalk at home as well, and we pushed them really close. I actually had a chance, I think it was around the 88, 89th minute, to snatch a point for us, and the keeper made a save that I probably should have scored. So it was a good enough start to the season. Then we beat Pats at home, and to be honest, we played Bows and they bet us 2-0, and we came away from the game really frustrated against a team who were ultimately trying to be, if not challenging, they'll be trying to get Europe, and we thought we were the better team for maybe 50, 60 minutes of the match. So it was a good start to the season for us, and look, we just want to try and hit the ground running. We have our own programme to sort of tick along with now, so we just want to hit the ground running again when we come back.
Yeah, so going back to that Dundalk game as well, Carl, it was such a good game from you guys. It's two set pieces that let the goals in. As you said, you had that one-on-one with Gary Rogers towards the end that could have nicked the point. But it just showed how much you'd improved and how much you'd sat out to your task. That with about 15 minutes left, Vinnie Pert starts replacing players with more defenders. I think they finished the game with six defenders on the pitch that day. It's just showing how far you've come on from the first division and pushed on now in the Premier.
Yeah, it was. Well, it was first thing was the two set plays, and we were really disappointed with that. We were really, really disappointed with, as we'd done so much homework on how are they going to hurt us, and the main threat was set plays, and we were saying, right, if we don't give away set plays, we have a real chance of winning. So as you could imagine, giving away two set plays was really, really disappointing. But as you said, if there is, I'm not really one to sort of celebrate defeats, but the good side of that was, yes, Dundalk showed us a huge amount of respect. As you said, they finished with six defenders on the pitch, and they were taking off sort of their attacking players because they knew we were causing them problems. So it gave us a lot of confidence going into the Pats game then the following week that, look, if we can do that to Dundalk, we can do it to Pats. And thankfully, we were able to beat St. Pat's as well.
Carl, you've enjoyed so much success as a footballer, league title winner with Shamrock Rovers in 2011, a league winner, of course, with Cork, a couple of cups as well with Cork. How are you enjoying life at Shelburne? Because you played with Shelburne as a schoolboy, but what's it like operating out of Tulka Park these days?
Yeah, I'm loving it at the moment, to be honest. It's a different mindset where, say, last year at Cork, I think a big problem that we had was we went from being winning every week, and when you start to lose games, you're not used to it. So ultimately, when you lose, it's a crisis every week. Now at Shelburne, if we lose a game, it is bad, but it's not the end of the world. We know, right, let's bounce back next week and try and get a win. And thankfully, we have done that so far, and I've been really enjoying it, working with Ian Morris and Craig Sexton. They're both really, really good coaches. And on top of that, there's fantastic people at the club. You have Andrew Doyle, Dave O'Connor, who are, you look at clubs from all around the league and pretty much all around the world where players are being asked to take wage cuts and everything like that. But thankfully at Shells, they said, right, look, lads, we're going to try and get funds in to pay you until this goes on, really. So we've got an email through today saying that they're looking after our wages until, I think it's 17th of June, maybe the 18th, when the league's to come back. And for obviously a player where your income isn't massive in the league, it's obviously a sort of a massive burden off your shoulders to have the club knowing that they're looking after you and have your back really in tough times.
Okay, well, they are tough times for so many people right throughout the country. Carl, we wish you the very best of luck. Mind yourself and wash the hands, keep your distance, and hopefully we'll see you back on the field of play very, very shortly. But thanks for joining us on the RTÉ Soccer Podcast. That's Carl Shepherd of Shelburne. James, I promised you we'd have a couple of questions for you. So are you ready to field the first question?
Go ahead.
Yeah,
go for
here
it.
We go. Now, it's just over a year, as you know, since Ireland defeated Gibraltar on the Rock, kicking off their Euro campaign. It seems like such a long time ago now. But can you recall who scored the Irish goal in that 1-0 win against Gibraltar in Gibraltar?
Oh, God, no.
I think it was early in the second half.
Second half, yeah.
Side foot finish.
I remember the goal, but who scored it? Oh, God.
Midfielder?
No.
You Googled it?
Someone who... No, I haven't Googled it, sir. I can't use my phone. I'm using this. It was only when you said midfielder. Was it Hendrick?
Spot on.
Yes.
Jeff Hendrick is the answer. I'll give you another one now and maybe another one later. Jack Byrne, who's very much part of the Irish setup these days. Well, hopefully so. Now, of course, playing for Shamrock Rovers. He spent some time on loan at a Dutch club. It's a tricky one there.
Yes.
Can you name the Dutch club?
It was... Give me a sec. It's an odd name, isn't it? Is it? It's not.
It is an odd name. Begins with a C. Hey!
Camber, is it?
Impressive, James. Yeah, well done.
Yeah, because even when he was at the time, he was playing really, really well with them. I actually thought it might have been a better idea for him to stay there. because I think he got a couple of goals with them as well.
I tell you what, we'll finish off the quiz now, seeing as you're on a roll.
Oh, don't.
Which former League of Ireland club played at Ballygowan Park? Ballygowan Park.
Ballygowan Park. I don't, was that a sponsored park, as in the water, or? I'm thinking it's. I'm thinking it's a Limerick club. I'll go with Limerick FC.
Good shout, but Ollie Horgan, the Finharris manager, is on the line. Ollie.
Yeah, Newcastle West.
Good man. Get in there.
Is that what we're looking for?
See, that's not fair. He's a teacher and everything. On. Like, do you know what I mean? He knows all this stuff. That's the geography coming into him there.
Do we get a prize? Unfortunately, Ollie, there's no prizes. Safe. No, there's no prizes. Sorry about that. How are you doing, Ollie?
Tonight, Ollie?
Yeah, okay, that's okay. Obviously, in the circumstances, yep, we're sticking at it, and no more than yourselves and everyone around the country trying to get through this. You know, so obviously the phone call here is probably taking your mind off things more than anything, you know.
Yeah, how have you found it so far? It's been tough for everybody, of course.
I certainly found it different. Personally, yeah, I think I wouldn't be used to having a whole lot of time in my hands, and not that I ever really complained, but it's been a lot of time on the road, going from one job maybe to another, as you all, the staff, and all my staff, if you like. But I certainly won't be complaining about time off, you know, or needing a day off in the near future, or put it that way.
And you're at home in Salt Hill, is that right? In Galway?
Yeah. I'm in Galway here, yeah.
Yeah, and how are you occupying your time, given, as you say, you're probably a 24/7 kind of guy between football and the day job, but how have you been keeping yourself ticking over?
Well, with difficulty, to be honest. I think the shed here is looking mighty. I don't think it's been painted in about, I'd say, 15 years, but I think there's more paint in it than wood left. But now, between that and between my parents are elderly in Salt Hill here, and I get a bit of food in that and leave it for them there, and you know, that kind of way, you keep a little bit occupied, and you know, just the sooner, as I said, we get over this, the better, and move on and get back to the football that we're used to, you know.
Would you be hopeful for a return to action on the 19th of June, or?
I don't think anyone knows. Would I be hopeful? I would love it to happen. Yeah, you know, like win, lose, or draw, whether you know, whatever happens. But you know, it depends obviously on how the next couple of weeks go and how people look after themselves and try and get through it. But like, you know, no more than anybody, football, while it's the life and soul of you, when it's on and the most important thing really in your life, it becomes very, very less important in a situation like this, and certainly the priorities aren't football at the moment.
Sure, absolutely. And yet, just to stick with the football for a few moments, Finharps had made a pretty decent start. You must have been happy enough with the way it had gone so far.
Yeah, well, we're happy enough to pick up a couple of results, but you know, we also suffered two defeats. One in Cork narrowly, and well beaten by Dundalk at home the following week. So, like, maybe the break came at a good time for us. We'd lashed two in a row, to put it that way, you know. But we certainly could have done without the break and to try and keep going. And like, it brings with it a whole load of problems. Football nature's financially in that for us. Don't mind, obviously, the health problems that are sweeping the country and the world, for that matter.
Yeah, Ollie, when you talk about the game in Cork, you were very unfortunate to even lose that game, to tell you the truth. So you had a goal disallowed in the game. But I suppose the break will give the groundsmen in Finn Park, I think that'll come back looking like Wembley.
Yeah, well, I won't go that far. But, yeah, most certainly, you know, if any positives can come out of this, you know, if you like, tragic situation or you know, the severity of the virus, we are trying to get work done on the pitch, and we've, you know, with limited resources, have with the dry weather that's there at the moment up the road, that we're trying to get at least that, you know, up to standard. And if anything good comes out of it, you know, which maybe that will, to pull it out.
Ollie, how long have you been in Donegal? Because as we mentioned there, you're originally from Galway, and you took over as Finharris manager, if I'm not mistaken, around about 2013. So you've been there a few years, but you're teaching in Donegal. How long have you been teaching there?
Oh, jeez, far too long. That's we're talking about 30 years here now at the moment, you know.
Is that right?
You know, I'd be on the road quite a lot, like, you know, between Donegal and Galway here, you know, between the two, between the breaks and weekends and football and that. But yeah, I'd be up there the guts, if not all of 30 years or even a little bit more, teaching in the school up there, St. Eunice College, a very strong sporting school, and still is, and a good place to work. And you know, although these are completely different days at the moment.
And before the Finharps managerial job. You had looked after a fan at United, so you've been immersed in football for quite some time now.
Yeah, certainly that. Yeah. I suppose to keep you out of trouble, football, but probably got us into as much as what it kept us out of. But yeah, I was with Senate and played with Senate for you know, the guts of, you know, about 20 years on and off. I managed them for the 10 years. Then after that, if you like, if that's the right mathematics, or maybe a little bit less. Good times, good people. You know, there was a lot of men that played with us, you know, ex-League of Ireland lads and local lads that probably gave everything to play for them. We had good years, you know. It goes in cycles. It's a rural area, but great people, the Sweeneys that looked after the club, second to none. And to a certain extent, you know, it's was a smaller version of maybe Finn Harps that, you know, locally up there, Fannett were strong at the time. And basically people bought into it of all walks of life, you know, and basically that's what we tried to do, albeit at a national level in Finn Harps, to try and climb up the division, which we eventually did with you know, through a little bit of ups and downs.
And you as a sports person yourself, Ollie, I presume you played Gaelic football. Mm. Did you play hurling as well, or was it Gaelic football and soccer?
We played any sport in Salt Hill here. We obviously Gaelic football in Salt Hill. It's in Salt Hill, like McCarra here now, would have been very strong. We played all the way underage, all the way up to senior. We hurled, albeit, you know, at a much more lower division. Look, we played Salt Hill Devon, obviously, was our soccer club. But all great people that looked after us in all sports, and, you know, proper men. That maybe taught you different core values that you try to take with you through life after that. But a good sporting background, that type of way, albeit, you know, with a limited, you know, if you like, involvement on my behalf. We'd some stars with all different sports in Salt Hill here. Certainly I wasn't one of them, but you made up the numbers, to put it that way, for you lads, you know.
You mentioned their core values. Is that something for you that's important as a person, that, you know, you said those men instill core values in you. You as a manager, and in terms of being a teacher as well, is it important to instill core values in players and students?
Yeah, most certainly. You know, look, not everybody might agree with the values I have, but they're the values that I was brought up with. But you know, with my parents and with the people I mentioned, and indeed people who I taught with and worked with. In Donegal up there, you know, especially in the sport and part of it, I teach PE up there, and you know, there's that little bit of respect that you try to show, whether you win or lose. We try to instill that, obviously, with the lads we have, but so do every other club. You know, it's not just us in any manner, but you know, a little bit of manners and that we'd look for, and to stand up and be counted. You know, the little values that you had with, you know, we you know, we were brought up with that, and we probably didn't know any better. And sometimes you expect that from people of a different generation. And while we're lucky enough to have got it 9 times out of 10, there's often times that doesn't happen at work, or indeed in sport with St. Harps, you know.
You clearly love managing. I know that sometimes you sort of, you wonder why you're in it, but, you know, you often hear managers saying that management is a drug, and they keep on returning to it, even though it can be such a hard task. But you must love it, do you?
Yeah, there's lots of ups and downs. You know, the certainly the games, win, lose or draw, the training, absolutely love that. You know, the bit of personal care in between, or, you know, the stuff on the phone sometimes can be tough going, to put it that way to you. But at times like this, when you're at a loose end, yeah, you'll take that gladly, the good and the bad of it, you know, to keep you occupied in that type of way, you know. But look, that's kind of what the club is, you know, from top to bottom, you know, both the players, the management, the board, you know, the supporters, that we've tried to get them to buy in and stand up and be counted in whatever limited part that is, you know. And you know, we can't wait to get going again, lads. Please God, come the middle of June or whenever, you know. I wouldn't mind mentioning Frank Larkin, that passed away, who was a disability officer with our club, a great lad, and he passed away on Friday last. You know, he was at every home game, and it was was a great bit of stuff. You know, you're talking about core values. Frank certainly had them, but unfortunately he passed away last week and will be sorely, sorely missed in Finn Park, you know.
That's it. Yeah, as you said there, Ollie, Frank, everybody who went to Finn Park got yeah. to meet Frank on their way in or else on their way out. They always had a smile on his face and doing as much as he could for the club. And it was, as you said, on Friday evening, I think it was, the Finn Harps put out the message that he'd sadly passed away. And obviously all our thoughts about him and his family at this stage. Going back to St. Eunan's, any chance of a soccer player coming out of there? Like, we've seen Mark English come out, we've seen a number of GAA players. Surely you can do something for the soccer end of it.
Yeah, we would have had great days in soccer and not one really to go and publicise it. But, you know, there was probably at the time we'd great people taking teams that instilled those values that I'm talking about. And I think it was 2003, 2004, that the school up there would have won the three All-Irelands, you know, that were on offer, the 13, 17, 15, the three soccer All-Irelands that the school actually won, which will never be repeated. And that's not me trying to you know, promote anything, but they would have had some serious teams over the years. You know, lads, a couple of lads went over to England and came back. You know, the ones that are still there, you have the likes of young Dale Garman over with, he's out in loan at Newport, and that a lot of lads would have played both sports, you know, and continue to be fair, and that's the kind of background that the place has. But, you know, funny enough, that the school was in the All-Ireland Senior Final to be playing against Douglas of Cork, but that obviously won't be taking place at the moment, you know. But you know, strong in all codes, and you know, please God, we'll continue to produce whatever we're producing.
All right, listen, Ollie, many thanks for joining us, and leave that shed alone now. It's painted
okay,
enough.
Let's.
There you go. Thanks very much, Ollie. That's Ollie Horgan, the manager of Finn Harps. James, he's one of the league's great characters, isn't he?
He is indeed. He's always a pleasure to interview, because no matter how good his team has done, they've always been the luckiest team in the world as far as Ollie's concerned. But with himself and Paul Hegarty, they put absolutely everything they possibly can into every single match. You see them on the bench, they're very, very enthusiastic and jumping around and stuff like that. Now, they do see more yellow cards than most footballers on the pitch do, but it just shows their passion for the game. And it's great when you've got a good, strong Finn Harps, like you said earlier, Adrian. They started this season so well. Like I think they've got more points than they did by August of last year already. So yeah. It's just an awful shame that the season has come to where it is. But as you said yourself, there's bigger things out there that we have to think of this time, not just soccer.
All right. Well said, James. Now, over the next couple of weeks, we plan to look back at some notable moments in League of Ireland football. And today, we're going to feature Sligo Rovers' league triumph in 2012, which was a first league title for the Bitter Red in 35 years. A side that contained the likes of Gary Rogers in goal, Gavin Pearce, Jason McGuinness, the legendary Joey Endow, Raf Crataro, Mark Quigley, and the goal predator Danny North. Well, Ian Barraclough managed the side to that title and also led Sligo Rovers to the FAI Cup with a dramatic win over Drogheda a year later, and also the Setanta Cup in 2014. Ian is on the line. We also have Alan Keane, who performed the role of right back brilliantly in that title-winning season for Sligo Rovers. And Ian, first of all, Paul Cook had up sticks and took over as manager of Accrington Stanley. You succeeded him as manager of Sligo Rovers quite late in the day, so very much a sharp batman's on fire for you.
You could say so, yeah. It was one of those where I took a phone call on the Sunday evening. Was I interested in the job? I said, I don't know a great deal about where Sligo was for a start, so I had to do a bit of homework quickly, and then called back and said, yep, I'll come over and have a chat. I think there was two or three of us being interviewed for the role, and fortunately I managed to get it, but it was a quick turnaround. I had to get over there and sort of get straight into it without any sort of preparation, which had been done, you know, previously. I think Paul Cook had started it before going to Accrington in pre-season, and then Jerry Carr took over for a couple of weeks, I believe.
It was quite remarkable. Alan, of course, you were there, and you had been there a couple of years at that stage. You had won the cup, a couple of cups under Paul Cook. But that season, the 2012 season, if I recall, you started off at Shelburne and Jason McGuinness got a late equalising goal. And that was also a match in which Mark Quigley got sent off. And I think he got a pretty hefty ban at the time.
Yeah,
our first game. It was kind of a bit weird because I suppose we'd lost our manager and then Gerry Kerr took us over for a while, and then we only found out, I think it was a week before the season, that Barrows was taking us over. So, like myself, I Googled him and then I seen his career and then was like looking forward to it. So the first game came around fairly quick with Shelburne, and he came into the dressing room and it was just all calm, and I think was which we needed. And after the turbulent of the off season that we had, and I suppose we nicked a late equaliser, and unfortunately, yeah, we found out after the game then that the following week that Mark Quigley had received a 6-game ban. So that was a bit of a kick in the teeth to us.
And you went on quite a good run after that, didn't you? After that opening day draw at Tulke Park.
Yeah, we did. I suppose myself, I got sent off then in the second game. So, to be honest with you, Barra is probably saying Jesus lad, getting sent off every game here. So, and we nicked a 90-minute winner there again. But we went on a run all the way through until we got defeated to UCD. But I think it was around the end of April, beginning of May, is kind of we started to really say that we are title challengers here, because we had St. Patrick's Athletic, Drogheda and Shamrock Rovers. And we got a bit of luck in the St. Patrick's Athletic game, because I think Christy Fagan missed a late penalty. We ended up coming away with a draw. And then we beat Drogheda away and then beat Shamrock Rovers convincingly at home 3-0. So I think it was then we kind of... said we're in with a good shout here.
Yeah, Ian, was there a turning point in that season for you where you thought to yourself, yep, it could be on this?
Well, I think early on, after the, I think we'd won 9 out of the first 12, even though the Monaghan game had obviously been taken away from us. So, you know, I think expectation was starting to rise from that point. Keno's already just said there, I think when we beat Shamrock Rovers at home 3-0, it was probably our best performance of the season up to that point. I think people were certainly saying that we're title contenders. It's even ours to lose, which was a little bit previous for me. And it was trying to dampen those expectations and trying to keep the players focused, making sure that we trained properly, making sure that we were right mentally going into not only every game but every training session. And I think, you know, you saw the lads, you look at them, the way they worked, they were fantastic in training, the enthusiasm. You know, it makes the sessions, you know, we never had a problem with the, you know, the lads what they put in training. They were there first thing in the morning. We did a gym session, or whether it was just a stretching session, or I think Keno, I introduced yoga, and not too many enjoyed doing that, but I think it got better as the season went on, and it was something that we, you know, everyone just started to pull together and make sure that everyone was, you know, rowing in the same direction, if you like. But having said that, when we beat Shamrock Rovers and beat Shelbourne, I remember we then went on a 3-game run. We got beaten by UCD. I think we got knocked out of the cup by Monaghan at home, which was an absolute disaster. You know, you thought we were going to get relegated, but you know, with some of the comments that were coming out, and then we could only draw away at Bohemians, and that was a 3-game run that we needed to come out of very quickly. It was our poorest run of the season, and so it was, you know, it certainly wasn't all plain sailing.
And talk to me, Ian, about the role of Joey Endo, because he had such a huge influence on things, didn't he?
He did, yeah. I'd obviously done as much homework as I could on players that I knew, and players that if I didn't know about them, I'd try and speak to people who I knew were from Ireland. Just tried to find out the background of each player, really. And Joey was one that was. I was in the hotel on my first evening. It had been a manic day, and I knew we had a game 2 days later. And Joey rang me actually and said, could I come down to the hotel? Can I speak to you? Just have a quick chat. I was actually having a meeting with Gerry Kerr. I'd had a meeting with Gavin Dykes. And when I said to Dykes, oh, Joe wants to speak to me after, he went, good luck. How long have you got? And you know, it was an hour or two. But you know, the way he spoke about football, the way he thought about football, I knew that he was going to be an ally, and it was going to be key him on board and really tap into his experience. As with you know, all the lads that have played a good few years in the League of Ireland at the time, you know, and Keno was one of them. Jason McGuinness was another. Piersey was another. Danny Venter had been over for a few seasons. Gary Rogers, you know, we had players. There was a real core of players that had good experience, but hadn't managed to win a league title. So for them, they were hungry, and it couldn't have been better for us, I don't think, at that time. But Joey, going back to him, he for me wasn't just one of the senior players or the standout senior player. He used to take sessions, whether it was just in individual sessions with players. I'd ask him to take a couple of units, you know, away, whether it go and work with the midfield. But it didn't even take me to ask him at times. He would want to do that. And, you know, he was great to go and work with.
Alan, there was a key point as well during that season when Danny North got injured during the European campaign. And Mark Quigley, who up to that point had been rather subdued at times in terms of his football, given his ability. But he really sparked into life once Danny North was ruled out for the rest of the season. Mark Quigley stepped up, didn't he?
Yeah, I remember North, he was on absolute fire from the start of the season. He continued where he left off the 2011 season. And everything he hit seemed to go in. And, you know, that home game against Sparta Trnava when he done his knee, it was kind of like, oh, what's going to happen here? And we were kind of worried because, in fairness, Mark Quigley, when we headed away, I think he was looking to get out. And I'll actually never forget the plane. We were going and we were announcing, looking for Mark Quigley. And I just remember Joey, speaking of Joey, he just turned to the chairman at the time, Dermot Kelly, and goes, "He's not coming." And everyone kind of just started laughing, you know. And that was Joey, kind of lift the spirits and stuff. But I think it was the game at home. I think Barron might be able to back me up on this. We were 2-0 down to Cork, and Quigs was on the bench. And I remember he came on, and he scored two goals and could have nicked a hat trick, and we got a draw. I think it was after that Trnava game, and I think that's what really kicked him into life. And then I think he went on and scored something like 13 goals then, and got Player of the Year. So it was a phenomenal turnaround for him.
It's a bit crazy, as you said, Ian, yourself, like the run of three games where you lost, and then you go all the way to October for your next loss, which is against your title rival at the time, which was Drogheda. So it was some run you went on right the way to the end, the middle of October, before you lost again.
Well, I had a quick look at the league table before speaking to you there, just to remind us of it. And you know, you look at it, and it's out of the 30 games, because the three main games don't count, obviously, but we won 17 of those and you know, drew 10 of them. But you know, up until those last two games, which I don't tend to count anyway, because I think everyone was still celebrating, to put it mildly. You know, we'd lost one game in 28. So the consistency from the squad, and you know, I think you've already alluded to it, that we it wasn't always a settled side. There was injuries we had to contend with, whether it was Danny North and Keno. Erle Davren was injured for a little while. Danny Ventry picked up certain niggles. So it was, you know, it certainly needed to be a squad effort. And when Danny did pick up his season-ending injury, pretty much, it was someone needed to step up. And as it's already been said, Quigs had had an unsettled first half of the season. You know, it was certainly ongoing that he, you know, he wasn't settled in Sligo and wasn't necessarily enjoying it, because he wasn't getting as much game time as he'd liked. But you knew what his value would be to the squad if he got in, and it was a case of trying to keep him right, managing the way he travelled up and down from Dublin as well, and allowing him to have the odd day off when players weren't. And I think, you know, when he did get in and like, you know, said, scored those two goals to bring us back into the game against Cork, he didn't look back, and showed certainly what a striker he was, what a player in the League of Ireland he was, and rightly so, went on to get player of the season. But you know, that's when you need players to step up when you do lose key players, and Danny North's goals at the time, I think he'd scored 14 or 15 in his first 16 games, so he was going to take some some replacing.
Well, the title was won on a sun-soaked Saturday at the Showgrounds. Sligo taking on St. Pat's. Sligo's current manager, Liam Buckley, brought St. Pat's to the Showgrounds to try and spoil the party, or at least delay the party. Sligo, on course for the title, got into a 2-0 lead, pegged back to 2-2, and then in the dying seconds, a penalty for Sligo Rovers. Let's just reel back the years to 2012 and Sligo winning the title.
John Dillon takes this corner. It's flat. Gavin Pearce was there to make contact with it. And the referee has pointed to the penalty spot. And Sligo Rovers would appear have a late, late penalty. And the St. Pat's players are to a man rushing over to the referee's assistant. Bisto Flood has got a yellow card for his protest. But my, oh my, Stephen Kenny, what a big decision.
Oh, that looks extremely harsh. A corner kick has come in. And it looks like handball. It's point blank handball, though. There's no way the defender in question could have got his hand at it away, or it's just you never see them given. You just never see them penalties given, and the referee hasn't given it. The linesman's got involved and given it, and it's a very, very controversial penalty, it must be said.
2 minutes to go. 2 minutes for Sligo Rovers to clinch the league title. It's Mark Quigley against his old club. This. Surely to win the league title for Sligo Rovers. Referee Damien Hancock making sure everybody is outside the penalty area. Quigley perhaps to win the game and win the title for Sligo Rovers. Barry Murphy is on his line. This to win the title, and Quigley scores a little dig en route, and Quigley may well have won the league title for Sligo Rovers. Their first since 1977. Sligo Rovers leading by 3-2, moments away from wrapping up the league title. It is all over. We have in Sligo new heroes to celebrate, and the fans pour onto the pitch. 1977, the last time Sligo Rovers won the league, for only the second time in their history. It's been a long, long wait for those supporters who've invaded the pitch here. 35 years of waiting, but they have delivered a league title in the most dramatic of circumstances.
Ian, how special was that day for you? It was obviously very special for the players and everybody connected with the club and the supporters, but for you on a personal level?
The hairs on the back of my neck have just stood up as well listening to that, but it's... it was a special time. Certainly, I from my only previous management role at Scunthorpe, I was obviously too early for me to take over there. I think in the championship was difficult. So to be able to get back into work and at the first time of asking win a league title, first one in 35 years, as you said, was very, very special. But it had been building throughout the town, the expectation, as I'd already said, and to finally actually deliver it was a dream, really. Was something very, very special amongst everybody. My dad had travelled over to the game with my four brothers, close-knit family that had gone through quite a lot. I lost my mum at an early age of 8. So to have my dad there to see that and share that with as well was something truly memorable, yeah.
And for you, Alan, what were the celebrations like?
It was just unbelievable just to get over the line, I suppose. I missed out on the last six games of the season through. I broke my metatarsal. So for me, watching it on the stand, I was just completely helpless, but trying to kick and hit every ball, and it was just phenomenal. It was an unreal moment. But going back over the whole season, I think like what Barrett brought to the team, is I know people go on and say, we could have won it either way with whatever manager, but I don't think so, because under Paul Cook, we would have lost the games that we drew under Barrett. Like, his attention to detail, some of the stuff you get before games that people wouldn't see is the list of the opposition and their strengths and weaknesses. And for me, it helped me when you're coming up against wingers and stuff like that. And I think that's all everyone pulled together, and I think we got what we deserved at the end of it. And it was just one of them days that I'll never, ever forget, like once that final whistle went.
Ian, overall, because apart from the league title, which was the thing, as I mentioned at the outset, you also won the FAI Cup, a Setanta Cup as well with Sligo. How do you reflect on your time? Sadly, like so many things in football, it ended ultimately in tears, but how do you look back on it all now?
It was with great pride. It was something that I came into, blind, really. Didn't know the League of Ireland, didn't know a lot of the characters within it. I certainly had to change quickly from what I was used to back in England. You know, we had to show a strong mentality as a group. And the thing I tried to get across to the players very early on was that it wasn't my team. It was their team as well, and they had a part to play in it. And if anyone had anything to say, then it was valid. Don't be frightened to say something. Don't take umbrage if someone wanted to sort of say something different to what anybody else thought. And I think it was that mentality that got us through, really. You know, it can't be dictated to by one manager or one person. You know, everyone has to chip in. And from you know, young players that we had in the squad as well, we blooded the likes of Marty Owens, Jake Dykes, that, you know, they had to play some sort of minutes throughout the season. And you know, people like Danny Ventra, Keno, you know, Jason McGuinness, Jersey, you know, Joey was going to be crucial for me to be able to, you know, to manage this team. And you know, again, I look back at the year and a half afterwards, where winning the cup, where we, you know, we come third in the league or second, I can't remember that, second in the league and won the cup. We won the Stanta Cup the following year. And I still think, you know, it was so something for me to get used to was that the quick turn or the turnaround of play, and that took me by surprise, I think, certainly in the, you know, the first off season, if you like, where you're trying to re-sign players. They're only on either 40-week contracts or some, if they're lucky, were on 52-week contracts, but only really for a year. I think it may have improved a little bit in some clubs where they're, you know, they can now give them two-year deals or maybe more. But you know, you had to really work to try and keep your players. So at the end of that season, we lost Quiggs in the end, having kept him for the full season. But we knew we were going to lose him. Jason McGuinness went with him to Shamrock Rovers as well. You know, it was one of them where key players were going to be taken away from you. So, you know, you had to be ready to bring new players in, and that was something I had to get used to quickly.
You said about the new players, but the group seemed to have a great buzz about them, and everybody seemed to be in it together with the whole group, even where they were living in Sligo at the time. Everybody was together, everybody was going to train at the same time, everybody was going to the hotel for the gym work. And I remember we were there one day filming Free Kick King, if you remember it, Ian. I remember you dusting your boots down for that.
Now. I'm not sure I'll have to comment, can I?
No, but it was great to see the guys on that day, and I'm putting it down to that, coming out of that run, all down to Free Kicking, by the way, that poor run of three games, all down to that.
Well, we had a squad, we had a tight-knit squad, as I've already said. We had a siege mentality in the dressing room, so even when the, you know, some of the fans were having a go at us for the performances, you know, it wasn't going to derail us. You know, we had to have strong minds, try and block all that out. Without the fans, without the support of the town, you know, I remember going round to the bars, restaurants, just asking to see if they could provide a lunch for the lads, just to try and keep us together, try and keep us, you know, I didn't want anyone going away from training, just back to the houses, and certainly the lads who lived in Riverstown going out there and then be sort of split off or cut off to the rest of them. You know, it had to be something that needed to be done together. And without the support of them people, them businesses as well, it all came together to make it a special season. And I think, well, sure, the time I look back at it, it was all special to me, but because of, you know, it was a whole community coming together and delivering what was a, you know, I think a special product at the time.
And Ian, these days you're managing Northern Ireland's under 21 team. How are you enjoying that challenge? You've recorded some notable results.
Yeah, I'm loving it. It was different. Again, I'd had time at Motherwell in Scotland as well, and enjoyed that. All coming up with different challenges, but actually going to the under 21s and working with a younger age group for the first time, because I was assistant manager at Oldham, Stephen Robertson, and you know, it was he that sort of said to me, look, the job's coming up for grabs. Why don't you ask about it? And it was something that appealed to me. And say, working with a younger age group, I was wondering how it was going to pan out. But for me, it's been superb. I enjoy when we do get together. It's different because you've not got a squad of players week in, week out. So you've really got to plan and be ready for those sort of 9-10 days that you are together. You've only got two games to prepare for. One may be a friendly and another would be a Euro qualifier. So, you know, all different challenges. But it's been good. I've really enjoyed it. And like you say, we've picked up one or two good results along the way. And hopefully, you know, things like that we can build upon. But my job is to ultimately try and get as many of the under-21s prepared for senior international. And we've had sort of 9-10 players already go into the squad at different times. So, yep, things going okay so far, and long may it continue.
Absolutely. Continued success. Ian, many thanks for joining us and reliving Sligo Rovers League title success of 2012. And also many thanks as well to Kino Alan Keane in Sligo. James, that's about all we've time for, James. But I do promise you we will focus in on Derry City very soon. Is there a particular league season or a campaign or a match that you want us to talk about and maybe get a couple of guests on for?
Well, you'd have to go for 2006, the European run. I think,
yeah,
an absolute European run of legend, really, with IFK Gothenburg, Gretna, and then Paris Saint-Germain.
Okay.
Absolutely great time to be a Derry fan. Cost us a fortune, but it was a great time to be a Derry fan.
Okay. Well, listen, we'll do that. All going well, we'll do that. We'll continue to try and keep the old podcast going. So many thanks, James, as always, and all going well. We'll talk to you next week. From all of us, bye-bye.